and Nystrom. Nystrom's really getting some good right hands in.
Gillies is down with Sandstrom. Somebody better help Sandstrom.
Everyone must be held accountable for their actions.
You cannot see your star carried out in a stretcher and do nothing about it.
Oh, my. Did Mick plant one on C-card? Wow.
You can't put a bounty on a man's head.
I just did.
Yeah, that's exactly what we should do. Run him up and fill him in.
Then why don't you?
The kids don't want it. They don't skate. They don't score. They don't hit. They don't fight. They float.
They don't love to win.
They don't hate to lose.
Spinning. Who's he going to go after? The puck drops and Baumgartner goes right to King Flattenburg.
But just a minute, Al Arbor has won four Stanley Cups, so don't start telling Al Arbor what to do, you and John Davison.
This is Coliseum Chronicles, The Penalty Box, your source for Islanders Enforcer Talk. Proud member of the Hockey Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Joe Lazzito. And welcome to Milestone Episode 150. This episode is about a road trip I recently took with my son, the OHL road trip, also known as poutine-fueled brutality. Now, you might be wondering what that's about. That is a obvious play on the title of a Black Label Society, well, album. I still call them albums because I am 53 years old. Black Label Society put out an album called Alcohol Fueled Brutality. Obviously, I had a beer or two while we were up there, but more than that, I had a ton of poutine. So it's poutine fueled brutality. And since it's 2024 and it is hockey, not so much on the brutality side, but I kind of thought it was clever, so let's go with that, okay? If you're on social media, be it Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, in the show notes, you'll find links to my accounts on each of those platforms. Definitely reach out. Let's connect. That would be a lot of fun. You get more of this, but yeah, hit those links. Let's connect on social media. Also, if you have an art project and you're like, who can I get that I know is going to do the job? Who can I get that doesn't suck? Who can I get that is world renowned? Well, look no more. Joe Maricich, Mighty Joe Maricich, Long Island's own graphics joker, the person who created the logo for this program. You can reach out to Joe at Graphics Joker on Twitter. Now, I keep saying Twitter. I guess it's X. But you know what I mean. Or via loudegg.com. As I said, I am a proud member of the Hockey Podcast Network. Tons of shows on the network. Every team has at least one program dedicated to it. I think the Islanders have two. I'm not sure. I am on the original content side, although that side is dwindling rapidly. Along with the OG, the fourth line voice. That's what's his name? Sean Connery, right? The fourth line voice, Darren from Saskatchewan, the OG fourth line voice podcast. He's been on the network a very long time, and I'm recording this Monday morning. I was going to record last night, but I ended up watching some TV with the wife, and so I'm getting this done this morning. Now, I haven't listened to the episode number 369. Darren discusses the toughest brand in Wheat Kings. I hope Kevin Cheveldayoff is mentioned. Jeff Odgers has to be mentioned, I'm sure. Brent Severn played a little bit in Brandon, but I guess I'll find out. Also, he does a player spotlight on Matt Henry, someone I am not aware of, so I'm very interested in that. And he gets into a discussion about CTE. Now, this past week, and I'll get into this a little bit more in a moment, but Darren generally, he entertains the trolls. It's like he feeds the animals at the zoo, and he likes having these discussions that sometimes that get heated a little bit. And I know Matt Barnaby posted something about the unfortunate passing of Chris Simon, which I'll get to in a moment. And I think Darren either retweeted it or answered it. And that, I believe, was the match to the fuse that ignited some of the conversation. And as you know, on social media, you never know what you're going to get. I guess it's like a box of chocolates. But so I think he gets into that. That's what I'm guessing this is about. Like I said, I haven't listened to it yet. I will listen to it as I run some errands today. But as I always say, definitely check out the back catalog. He's got some great solo episodes, got some great interviews. And, you know, he really is the guy who started this all. As much as I don't like to give him credit, maybe get that ego a little bigger, although it's probably huge right now because he's a big-time gambler, and I know he usually does pretty well with the March Madness. So so he might be raking in the Canadian funds right now. I'm not sure. But no, Darren's a great guy, and definitely check out the back catalog as well as the Fourth Line Voice YouTube channel, because if we're being honest, if you've ever watched a hockey fight on YouTube, chances are it was on the Fourth Line Voice YouTube channel. As I said, this is a milestone for me, episode 150. I did some research to see how many podcasts make it to episode 150. And you know what? I think I clicked on two or three links and they all had different numbers and they had different stats of how many podcasts make it out of the 10 episodes, and none of them jived up. And I'm like, you know what? I don't even give a shit. Whatever. I'm happy that I've made it to 150. I want to thank you people out there for listening. I've said it before. I like doing this. It's a hobby. It really helped me get through the COVID pandemic there. Helped me out by occupying my time. And then since things have been returned to normal, as I do that with air quotes that you can't see, I still enjoy doing it. And when I get feedback from people, it just fuels the fire. And, you know, I just really want to thank everybody out there who listens, who either sends me messages or doesn't send me messages, for your support. It really is something when I hear people actually listen to this. I'll just be honest. It's still 150 episodes in, and it's still shocking that some of you are tuning into this, but I really appreciate that. And, you know, Darren released episode 369 today. It took me, I don't know, how long have I been at this? A little over 3 years to get to 150. So 369 might be ambitious, but you know what? I don't see me stopping anytime soon. So we'll see where this goes. But I just want to thank everybody, you people out there who listen, thank you, because without you, this doesn't exist. So so thank you very much. So I alluded to Darren having CTE conversations on Twitter this week. Usually it's on Facebook. I think this week it was a lot on Twitter, but I'm sure there was some on Facebook. And it all stems from the unfortunate passing of Chris Simon. Earlier in the week, the day that the news broke, my phone was blowing up, and every text was, did you hear about Chris Simon? Have you heard about Chris Simon? Do you know if this is true? And, you know, you read these messages and you kind of hope that they're not true. You hope that everyone's reading the same report. But I guess deep down you kind of figure they are true. And I got the same kind of feelings when Clark Gillies passed away, and my son and I were at the Islanders game, and my phone was blowing up. You know, did you hear about Clark Gillies? Are they talking about Clark Gillies? And it's an awful feeling because, like I said, deep down, I guess you know it's true. You just don't want it to be. And I restrained myself for hours, not texting someone who I knew would know. And finally, I had to give in because it was a little much. You know, it was a little too much. And I shot a text to a friend who I knew would know, and he said, yeah, it's true. He's gone. Nothing's been made official yet. So keep it quiet. And I did. And It was literally 5 minutes, I think, after that text where the news became official. So it wasn't, for anyone that texted me, I wasn't keeping the news from you. It was probably less than 5 minutes after I got confirmation that confirmation was all over the internet. So really unfortunate. I think, you know, there's a couple of layers to this. There's the human aspect to it where I've said it a bunch of times over the course of my life, not just on this program. You know, we've all had rough patches in our life. We've all had moments, and, you know, whether they were fleeting moments or extended moments, where I know we've all felt helpless. We've all felt like we had nowhere to turn. We all felt like we had no resolution to an issue. And I think for most people, something happens where you turn the corner or there is a resolution. And I've always said I can't imagine the mindset where a person has to go to realize or to believe that they have no other option than to take their own life. And that is not just for athletes, that's for anybody. And it's a real tragedy. I can't put myself in that mindset. I would never even try to put myself in there and say, yeah, I understand. I don't. I've had some pretty rough moments in my life, but never once did that thought creep into my head. And I think that's a lot of us. And the thought of actually crossing that threshold to the point where you feel like there's no hope, excuse me, is really tragic. And, you know, I say this all the time to friends, and I've probably said it here, and I know everyone's been saying it, so I may as well join in, but we all have different sets of friends, right? And this goes for former athletes that may listen to the show, or really anybody. You always have someone to talk to. You always have someone to reach out to. You should, yeah, if you're friends with me, don't ever feel helpless. Don't ever feel like you have nobody to talk to. I'm always a phone call away. I'm always a text away or a message away. Don't ever hesitate to reach out if you're struggling. And, you know, I hope that people who are friends of mine or acquaintances of mine understand that there's always a person on the other end that will try to help you out, try to talk to you and, you know, help you. And I hope that the friends I've made over the years and the acquaintances that I've made over the years realize that I'm one of those people. And I know that I am friends with some hockey players who over the years have had issues, a few of them with concussions. And I know one person I'm thinking of right now was going through a really tough time at one point. And I'm really happy to say that he's thriving right now, absolutely thriving. Every time I see him, he just looks like a completely different person. It's always good to see. So I just want anyone out there that is a friend of mine or an acquaintance of mine or a listener, if you're ever in that position where you feel like you have no hope, please reach out, whether it's to me or someone else. Please don't ever feel like there's no hope. And, you know, in the case of Chris Simon, I can't imagine what that feeling is like where you feel like there is no hope. So I did confirm it. And then, like I said, the news broke a couple of minutes later and you just start thinking about it. Now, Chris Simon is someone who I met the first time I met Chris Simon was the first trip in that, Quebec made to the Coliseum to play the Islanders. I was writing for Pro Hockey Magazine at the time. It's a magazine that was in Sweden, Finland, and Norway. And I had my own section of the magazine called Ice Fighters. And Chris was unbelievable. What a really, really nice man. And the way the story goes, I met him on the way to the rink in the morning, going to the morning skate. And I basically introduced myself. I told him about the column and I asked him if he might have a few minutes after the game. I had a credential so I could see him in the locker room, and he told me that the Nordiques were staying over till the next day, so we didn't have to rush to do it in the locker room. He was coming back to grab dinner here, so just meet him over here, which I thought was great. And so game happens. I go there after the game, and I see he's eating dinner in the restaurant at the old Marriott. Well, it's the Marriott's still there, but everything is new. But he's eating dinner with Craig Willanen, and I see him, and they're right by the edge. So I'm like, oh, hey, Chris. I said, I'll just wait for you to finish, and then we can do this. And he's like, no, come and sit down. Come and sit down. You know, sit down. You want anything to eat? No, no. And so we ended up just bullshitting for a while. Then him and Craig got these giant ice cream sundaes. And then after that, you know, we chatted for a bit, did the interview. And from that point on, every time Chris came to the Coliseum, we were always friendly, chatting. And I will say I have or had relationship with several guys that did the job over the years. And every time they would come to play the Islanders, I would see them. We'd chat, bullshit, whatever. Chris was always a guy who seemed like he sought me out. And just and Chris was an intimidating person, especially years later when he grew the hair out and he had the beard and everything. I think people were probably just terrified to look at him. But I always said the contradiction of terms that Chris Simon was his appearance. And then when you talk to him, because he looked like he could be a supervillain in any movie or in a biker movie or TV show, like right out of Sons of Anarchy. And then when you talk to him, he had this deep, soothing, gentle voice. And you probably expected another voice to come out of him, but that was his voice. And no matter what, it was always, you know, if he was talking to someone, he always made a point to come over and talk. And whenever Andrea was there, he'd always make a point to include Andrea in the conversations. And just a very, very nice guy and someone who I always looked forward to talking to, you know, more so, not more so, but, you know, what if he had had a big fight, or especially once he went to Washington where he was getting a ton of playing time, maybe he got a couple of goals in a game, got a Gordie Howe hat trick. I don't remember, but it was always fun to talk to him. And with Quebec, with him and Twist, it was a lot of fun. And then with Washington, when it was him and Killer and Craig Berube, Brendan Witt, Mark Tenorti, I mean, that was some team to watch. That was a lot of fun. So I'll always remember our talks. I'll always remember seeing Chris when he would come over. And, you know, then later on, he ended up playing for the Islanders, which was great for me, because I always love when these guys have the Islanders on the back of their hockey cards. So that was something special for me. And, you know, he had a couple of incidents with the Islanders that he got suspended for. The one with Hallweg, I think people remember. The thing with Ruutu, Ruutu's a, well, I'm not saying that Jarkko Ruutu may have had what was coming to him. He always played on the edge. And, you know, you hear Penny in the background. She's barking at the, someone's getting a package from Amazon across the street. And my little dog is protecting the household. So if you hear barking in the background, that's Penny. So give me 1 second while I settle down this killer dog. Crisis averted here. The Amazon guy is safe. My little dog is not going out to gnaw on his leg. So everything should be good now. But getting back to what I was saying about Chris, just having Chris with the Islanders was great. And you know, with a lot of these guys, you lose contact once they're done playing. And a few people had asked me this week if I had ever tried to reach out to Chris to get him on the show. And I did. I know he had some social media accounts, even though I don't think he was very active. I did send a message or two to him. And I actually asked a couple of his former teammates to reach out to him on my behalf. And nothing ever materialized, which is unfortunate. It seems like with these guys, it would be nice to have, you know, like an oral history of their career. And, you know, like this week with Chris Simon passing, I'm sure that Google was flooded with people searching for Chris Simon, and not for me. But if I had interviewed Chris Simon, you know, maybe people would be able to hear a full-length interview of Chris with Chris in his own words about his career. And I would have loved to interview him, don't get me wrong, but I think it would have been nice for people to hear Chris talk about his career in his own words. So that's my memories of Chris. Obviously, I have the on-ice memories. I love his fight with Ty Domi. And I'll never forget when he got traded to Washington. I was in the press box and David Poile was up there, and I think that's when the trade was announced. And I turned to David and I said, I think you got the next Clark Gillies there, you know, and he just, David Poile was probably like, who the fuck is this guy? But, I mean, he was, Chris was so tough. He's an all time tough guy, and he's, you know, had skill, you know, had a share of issues, you know, through his career. I know Ted Nolan has discussed kind of corralling him as a junior player and helping him in his career. And I think for anyone who's a fan of Chris Simon, we're grateful to Ted Nolan because it kind of set him on his path towards the NHL, and we all got to benefit from that. So as far as Chris Simon goes, not that he's listening to this, but I hope that if he was living with some turmoil in his life, I hope that he's at peace now. My condolences to his friends and family and former teammates out there. It's tragic. It's definitely very tragic. And I hope that his family, his friends, they can find some peace. Like I said, I think for anyone that crosses that line into thinking this is your only resolution, they're probably living with a lot of turmoil and a lot of struggle. And it sounds stupid to say that I hope he's at peace, but I do hope that he's at peace now. And I do have something else I'd like to say that isn't so nice, but whenever something like this happens to an enforcer, of course, the people are out there, the media, which again, always seems to come around from Toronto. And it's always the guys who would need protecting if they ever had the skill to play. And what do? You go and you take advantage of a news story. You don't care about Chris Simon. You never cared about Chris Simon. But, and you guys know who I'm talking about. And I'm sure one of them has a show on this network. I don't read his stuff, but I'm sure he was all over it too. You guys don't care about Chris Simon. You didn't care about Wade Belak. You didn't care about Steve Montador. You didn't care about Todd Ewan. You didn't care about any of these guys. You're all full of shit. What happens is something happens and you idiots take the opportunity to use this to further your agenda. You guys are pieces of shit. You people out there know who I'm talking about. And it's really fucking heinous and disgusting that a person takes his own life and these fucking parasites use it to further their agenda. And it's fucking disgusting. And you're all pieces of shit. And I'm not even talking about the 20-something white knights on social media that all of a sudden care about a guy they never saw play. Or like now it's the whole Matt Rempe thing where they're going to protect Matt Rempe with their tweets. Now, fuck off. You guys don't care. You don't care about the guys. You care about your agenda. And you're all scumbags for doing so, using people's deaths to further your bullshit agenda. I have said this before. There is a player who unfortunately took his own life that a big feature was written about in The Athletic by someone, what's his name, Myrtle, who we blocked each other because I had the audacity to call him out on his article and ask him why he didn't do all his due diligence. And he insisted he did, but he didn't. He didn't get everything that was made available to him, which is public record, and he didn't interview the key person that he could have interviewed. Because if he had done either of those, it totally would have ruined the narrative he was trying to push. So this isn't me just speculating. This is me knowing a fact or two facts or three facts that these guys don't want to do the whole story because it doesn't fit their agenda. So for any reporter out there that used Chris Simon's death or used any of these guys that died in the past for your fucking agendas, you can all go to hell and you're pieces of shit. So fuck you guys. That is something I've wanted to get off my chest all week because I saw it all over and it's reprehensible and it's absolutely awful. Now spinning on that, but when I'm done with this episode, I want to talk about hockey culture because hockey culture is now something, it's a phrase that has a certain connotation again, based on some of these people, but I want to talk about hockey culture when I'm done talking about what I'm about to get to, the OHL road trip. But before I get to that, please stand by for these commercial messages. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets, only on DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. So last August, Andrea and I went to a Buffalo Bills preseason game. We would love to go to regular season games, but they are quite expensive. Everything is a season ticket, so you're buying tickets off of the secondary market, and well, they get a bit pricey because the Bills are pretty damn good. So it doesn't matter to me. I just like going. I love going to Buffalo. I know some people shit on Buffalo, but I love it. I love the people there, and I love the atmosphere, and of course I love the Bills. Andrea loves the Bills. And preseason game or no, you know, whether Josh Allen plays a series or a quarter or whatever, I just like being there. And the cool thing is, Bills fans are rabid, and even for a preseason game, they'll almost sell out. So that was a lot of fun. During the game, my wife turns to me and says, you know, you should really do a boys trip. You take the boys to a Bills game. I'm sure it'd be a lot of fun. I'm sure they'd like it. And I said, yeah, that's actually a great idea. It's definitely something that I want to look into. So as the season progresses, and for me, I want to go to a cold weather game. I always say, for me, a bucket list item is seeing a Bills game in Buffalo in a blizzard. I would love to do that. Now, I don't think the boys want to do that, and I know, hell, Andrea does not want to do that. But for me, I want to do it. Years ago, they played that game against the Colts. That would have been unbelievable to be at. I would have loved to have been at that game. How I'm getting there and how I'm getting from the stadium, of course, I haven't thought that part out. But I would love to be in the stadium for a blizzard game. But I wasn't waiting for that. I was just waiting for the season to progress and see how things were going. And probably around the middle of the season, I started looking at ticket prices, and you know, they're doing pretty well, so the tickets are pretty expensive. And I'm looking and I'm seeing prices in the threes and the fours, and that's just a lot. That's just, that's a lot of money. And this past season, the Bills had kind of a dip, and they were struggling. And I thought, well, I don't want them to keep struggling, but if they do, maybe the prices will go down. And then, all of a sudden, every game was a must-win game. And they pulled it off. So now, every game's a must-win game. They're winning games. Now the tickets are going through the roof. Even for NFC teams, teams that come in once every 4 years, it would have ended up basically being probably with gas and hotel and probably a $2,000 trip. Now, I don't have $2,000 lying around. And I started thinking, well, what can I do to, you know, spend time with the boys away from the house, away from the neighborhood, you know, sort of a trip. And I started thinking, well, you know, they both like hockey. They both really in the last 5 or 6 years have really gotten into the sport, even though I'm sort of not enamored with it as much as I once was. I love going to games with them because they're so into it. They kind of keep me in it. And I was thinking, all right. So I look at the schedule, and I see the Islanders are playing in Buffalo in March. So I said, okay, so I don't want to just drive up to Buffalo for a hockey game. Let's see. Well, the OHL's right across the border. Let's see if there's any games around there. We can kind of maybe go see a couple of OHL games, then end up with the Islander game and head home. And I come up with this map, not a literal map, but we could go here, 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 go to the Islander game, then come home. But now, my oldest son, who graduated college, now he starts a new job. So I'm not sure he's going to have enough time to get time off. And I realized my youngest son will still be in school, so he might not be able to go. So now I'm kind of thinking to myself, if they can't go, do I still want to go? I think I'm the typical man that has a family. I'm a typical dad. You kind of put everything on your shoulders and you kind of try to solve everything. You try to handle everything and try to be there for everyone. And you kind of maybe at times overburden yourself, although I don't consider it a burden. This is what I signed up for. This is my family. I love them and I would take a bullet for each and every one of them. And I want that responsibility. But I think every now and then you kind of need to step away and maybe catch your breath. And I started thinking, maybe if I have to go myself, I'll go myself, just to kind of get in the car, just drive, clear my head, just take a little bit of time and just see some hockey, draw, you know, the way I mapped it out, it was going to be a lot of time in the car, just some alone time. And it was funny because I had to talk with Andrea, and Andrea said, well, aren't you going to be lonely? And I said, I think that's one of the differences between men and women, where I think women like to be around your friends, around other people, whatever, where I think a guy can pretty much just be by himself and not be lonely. So I said, no, I don't think so at all. But then my son started that job, and as we're a month, maybe 6 weeks out from the trip, he checks, and lo and behold, he will have enough time to get a week off to do the trip with me. So now the trip was going to be awesome when it was just me. Now it just became exponentially more awesome that it will now be a father-son trip. So that is the genesis of the trip. And like I said, unfortunately, my youngest son couldn't go, but all that means is that it will be another trip that I can do with the baby boy, and we'll take care of that at some point. So as I was talking about this trip with my friend Anthony, I was saying, you know, it'd be cool, maybe every year do a different province. And I think we both realized we couldn't do a trip to Quebec, because outside of Montreal, and especially once you get into these smaller junior towns, they don't speak a lick of English, and they don't like it that you don't speak a lick of French. So I think the only way a trip to Quebec to do a junior tour of Quebec would work is if we had a French interpreter. So if that one comes to fruition, that would probably be the last one. But we were thinking about that. We should try to do a different province every year. So God willing, if the finances are in a good place, we may be hitting Saskatchewan later this year. But that is down the road, and a lot of things can happen between now and then. As you know, life can change in an instant. So now we get to the trip. So what we're going to do, my son and I, we're going to head up to Canada. We're going to hit some junior games, and then we're going to end up in Buffalo to see the Islanders play Buffalo. We're going to head home. But I want to talk to you about the trip we took. So for those of you who say, hey, love your solo episodes, well, buckle up, because I got a lot of notes here that I want to talk about. So first game that we go to, was March 9th, Kitchener at London, Budweiser Gardens in London, Ontario. First and foremost, I want to thank Eric Bolton and the Bolton boys for the tickets. And thanks to Eric Bolton for your parent discount for merch. Really appreciate that. So Joey and I got to watch the game with Eric Bolton and his wife. So in this episode, I ended up meeting a lot of the wives, and I'm not going to say their names because they're just going to be the wife or Mrs. Bolton in this case, because they may not want their names out there. So I'm going to keep them anonymous. But we got to watch the game with Eric and his wife. She was a blast. I think it was probably 15 minutes into the game, and I said, man, you got to meet my wife. I think you guys would hit it off great. I just think Bolt's wife and my wife at a hockey game, or, you know, having margaritas or something, would be something to see. So hopefully we can make that happen one day. Now, for those of you unfamiliar, the reason why Eric and his wife were at the game is that their two boys play for London, and they are Boltons. And I say that with the utmost respect, and they are Boltons, Sawyer and Ryder. All right, we're going to get to them in a second. So first impressions of the venue, very nice arena. And I've had I had people tell me a month before that, you better make sure you get your tickets because they always sell out. And this is a Saturday afternoon game, so there's probably going to be tough time getting tickets. So even more so, thank you to the Boltons for getting us tickets. Very nice arena. Lots of green there for London. That's one of their main colors. Lots of green in the crowd. Packed to the gills. Absolutely packed to the gills. So before the game, when we met up with Eric and his wife to get the tickets, they told me that Ryder was a healthy scratch, but Sawyer was playing. And Sawyer was coming off a two-game suspension. Now, what I found out was I knew he had been suspended a few times this year, but the two-game suspension were games 18 and 19 that he has been suspended for the season. And the weekend before, Eric had sent me a video of Sawyer, and he said, well, he's going to get suspended two games. So in my head, I'm like, shit, he's not going to be playing this game that we're going to. But fortunately, they had two games in the middle of the week, so that would be his suspension. So I guess as long as he didn't do anything crazy, and of course, he's a Bolton, so that you never know, like coming out of the stands or something, well, he was going to be able to play that Saturday, and he did. One thing I noticed, I'd never noticed this before, so we're down there watching warm-ups. And I don't know if this is in all the junior leagues or if it's an OHL thing, and with Branch, who the hell knows. But linesmen come out for the warm-up, and each one of them stands at each end of the red line. And I said to Joey, I'm like, look at this. And I was wondering, like, did something happen in a game earlier this year between London and Kitchener that they want these officials out there to keep the peace? And then I go, I bet you that's because of Sawyer. That's the Sawyer-Bolton factor. So again, I wasn't sure if that was something they did across the league, and I stupidly did not pay attention to it when we went to the other rinks because it really just caught me off guard. So, but the other games we went to, I didn't notice it. I didn't look for it. So when we sat down, I said to Eric, I said, what's the story with the officials in the warm-up? And he just started laughing, and he's like, yeah, they want to make sure you don't cross the red line, you don't start shit in the warm-up. And I go, oh my god, I said, so they just take everything away from the players like it used to be? I mean, we've talked about, especially with Mick Vakoda, the you know, cruising the line and guys going over the line. You know, Ivan Matulik had a great story about that involved Mick Vakoda in his episode. But now the officials stand out there, and Eric told me that Sawyer did have to have a phone call about a red line violation. So, God, these kids, they're unbelievable. And I say that with the biggest smile on my face. So at least in the London game, they have officials standing on each end of the red line to watch these guys. Like, are you serious? You're babysitting these kids now because, God forbid, they say a mean thing to the other side. Like, are you fucking kidding me? But again, that's another thing I noticed, the red line violations. So we're watching the warm up. I see Sawyer's out there. I knew Ryder. Well, I wasn't sure if Ryder was going to take the warm up because he was a scratch, but I didn't know if he's going to take the warm up. But then I see Isaiah George, and I realize that, hey, Isaiah George, he's an Islander prospect. And also Joey roots for the Flyers as well. Him and Dominic were born in Philadelphia. So when we moved back to Long Island, Joey kept his Flyer, which I'm happy about. He likes both teams. And London has two Flyer prospects, Radek Bonk's kid, Oliver Bonk, and Denver Barkey. And I think a couple days before that, Barkey had actually signed with the Flyers. So he was he had his pro contract, but of course he's going to still stay in London. So those were, aside from Sawyer, who I was, obviously was the one I wanted to see the most. Joey, we watched Bonk and Barkey, and I wanted to check out Isaiah George. Bonk and Barkey each had a goal and an assist. Barkey was the first star. Bonk was the second star. Isaiah George had an assist. Really good game, entertaining game. It could have got a little more physical than it did. I think fucking, you know, these officials, they just get in so quick now, not just in the NHL, down in Junior 2. You know, the games, and it's not even that they're going to get out of hand. This is not going to be the Western League of the 80s here. But, you know, they don't even give the kids a chance to, you know, be themselves, really. Like, to play a little physical if they want. You know, the fact that Sawyer has been suspended for 19 games this year is really miraculous with the way these guys, these stripes, they're on these players so quickly. It's a little disappointing. So the highlight of the game for me, of course, play was going up the ice and Sawyer just leveled a guy, just dumped him right into the bench. It was what a hit. You know, it was great to see. London won the game 4-1. And I was able to, after the game, I wanted to meet the boys. Eric and his wife were taking off. They had seen the boys the night before. And I just wanted to meet the boys to talk to them, introduce myself. I had already spoken to Eric about getting them on the show. And we're going to wait and see what happens, where they end up. Now, Sawyer is eligible to come back for his overage year. But my opinion, and I'm basing this off nothing, this is what I'm basing this on. He's been suspended 19 games. I can't see a world where David Branch allows Sawyer Bolton to come back next year. I don't see it. I think it would be great if you know, because I'm sure this Sawyer Bolton, he's in Branch's nightmares. Like, Branch for years, like, I know people hate Gary Bettman, and I can't stand Bettman, but if you're a guy who is a fight fan and you're upset that there is less and less fighting every year in the NHL, this is the guy. Like, I know everyone wants to point the finger at Bettman, but if you wanna end something, you start at the pipeline. And Branch, for as long as I can remember, has always been an anti-fighting guy. He's been whiny, you know, a little bitchy about it. And I was going to say cunty, but that might be a little too much, right? I don't know. Probably not. But just all the fighting, you know, he's just been whiny. And this is just for decades. And then it gets to the point now where I'm sure it's, well, now they got the 3-fight rule, and that's probably still too much for a guy who's probably never been in a fight, probably files his nails, gets manicures and stuff. So I'm sure even the 3-fight rule is too much. So things are probably going along very smoothly, and all of a sudden, now he's got another Bolton to deal with. He's got two more Boltons to deal with. And they're both rambunctious, but I'm sure that the Boltons, more Sawyer than Ryder, haunt David Branch when he closes his eyes. Now, Ryder has a few more years of junior eligibility left, so he'll be back. And I'm happy about that. It'll give me a reason to follow London. I could follow Ryder. And, God, I love those kids. They're great kids. But Sawyer, I'm sure, haunts David Branch's dreams and nightmares. Listen, he's the president, right? So he can pretty much do whatever he wants. I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm just thinking of, you know, people in positions of power. I would be shocked if Sawyer Bolton returns to the OHL next year. Now, I don't know if that means another junior league might take him on for his overage year. Maybe a more likely scenario is he turns pro. He's a big kid. I know. I mean, you want to talk about enthusiastic. Both these boys, they are enthusiastic. And I know I would love to see Sawyer take the next step. And listen, I'm not about to tell you Sawyer's going to play in the NHL next year. But if he turns pro, signs with the team, let him play in the East Coast League next year, because that is the league with the most tough guys. And, you know, hopefully his style of play will lead to him getting some ice time, not just to fight. He's going to have to be out there to defend his teammates, but you gotta let these kids play a little bit. You gotta give them ice time to develop their game. And I think there are plenty of teams in the East Coast Hockey League that could use them. There's a team in Orlando right now with the guy in charge, former guest of the show, Matt Karkner, who was a tag team partner, Eric Bolton here. So that could be a possibility. I don't know. I am selfish. I readily admit to being selfish. I would love to see Sawyer get a camp invite to the Islanders next year. And maybe start the year, play, start the year. I mean, look, I love the kid. A full season in the East Coast League is, for a first-year pro, have him play in Worcester next year. Okay, Worcester generally – Worcester went from having Yannick Turcotte and Mike Cornell and Ross Olsen, Chris Ortebody, to nobody. Nobody. And having Sawyer there as a kid, I know, speaking to Ross Olsen, he holds a lot of people in that organization in very high regard. So I think it would be good for a guy like a kid like Sawyer to play in an organization like that with some veteran presence. Even I think the coach is a longtime Worcester Railer. And I think it would be great to see. I mean, honestly, I think it'd be great for Sawyer to play another year junior. But I just don't see that happening. So maybe he turns pro next year. And again, being selfish, I would love to see the Islanders sign this kid, give him some seasoning in Worcester, because yesterday the Islanders played the Devils and Patrick Waugh wanted more speed. Matt Martin was a scratch. And I told my family, I said, this is what you're looking at post Matt Martin. There's no toughness in this organization. I wouldn't mind seeing Sawyer Bolton, be the second generation kid in the Islander organization. So hopefully, but I don't see him going back to the OHL. So I think Sawyer Bolton next year is collecting a paycheck of some kind for playing hockey, which I guess is great for him. But I would love to get back up for a game where Sawyer and Ryder play together. I'd love to see those two play in a game. So I met the boys after the game. Absolute beauties. Really respectful kids, and just their enthusiasm was just really hard to deny. Their enthusiasm, they come out and people just, the kids love them, the little kids love them, and they're really good ambassadors for the game. And just if I go back up to the OHL a road trip next year, even if Sawyer is in the East Coast League or something, I'm going up. I want to see Ryder play. I feel like I was gypped. I didn't get to see Ryder play, but what did we speak to them? Maybe 5 minutes, and their enthusiasm is infectious. And I know Branch probably hates them. I know Branch probably hates Pops too. But the fact is, this is your next generation hockey player. And there is nothing that I would love to see more than these kids progress to play pro and make a nice career for themselves, because they deserve it. And guys, if you're listening, it was great to meet you. And I really look forward to seeing where your careers take you. And of course, like I said, I spoke to Pops about, and you guys, about getting you on the show, but we're going to wait and see, where exactly, what happens, where you end up going. So, I don't want to mess anything up. I don't want to be the guy that people say, well, I heard him on this podcast, which I don't think it would be, but I don't want to be that guy. I'd rather, let's be safe than sorry. And I really, you guys, it was great to meet you. And I can't wait to see what's next for you both. So that would be awesome. So obviously, I had to try some poutine in London. I tried the buffalo chicken poutine, and for me, anything outside of the traditional poutine is bastardized poutine. And I knew I was going to have traditional poutine the rest of the trip, and I love buffalo chicken, so I'm like, let me try it. And the buffalo chicken poutine in London is very good. It's very good. I do prefer the traditional, but obviously, if you don't like buffalo chicken, don't get the buffalo chicken poutine in London. But if you do like buffalo chicken and you like the poutine, it's definitely an option that you can get. I would definitely recommend it. Unfortunately, I did not see any players on London with Italian last names. It was a little disappointing, but that's okay. Like I said, I was really there to see the Boltons. Kitchener had a couple of players, Antonino Puglisi and Luca Romano. So again, I'm biased. I root for the Italian kids. So these are a couple of kids that, and I'm not going to say I knew who they were before the game. I didn't. But now they're on my radar, so I want to see. I don't know if these kids are prospects. I don't know if this is the end of the road for them, the OHL, but obviously I wish them well, and just as long as they're not playing London. Now, after the game, Joey and I went to visit with an old pal, episode 60 guest Wayne Doucette. Now, I'd originally contacted Wayne when I knew I was going to London because I knew he lives around there. And Wayne wasn't sure he'd be around during the time we were in London. And he has a lot of stuff on his plate, so I didn't want to bother him. But thankfully, he got in touch with us the morning of the game and said he's home and, you know, what was our schedule for the day. And I said, well, we're just going to the game. After that, we're going to grab dinner, and then we're going to head to North Bay. And he goes, well, if you want, stop by, have dinner here. We'll bullshit for a little bit, and then you can go on your way. And I am so glad he did, because I wasn't going to bother him. Douche, you know, I told you this. I wasn't going to bother you with everything that was going on. And I'm so glad that you called me. So it was great to see him. We had burgers and poutine at his house. Poutine was excellent. Now, Dave Chizowski, former guest of the show and renowned British Columbia chef, he kind of got involved on the on Deuce's Facebook post because I mentioned I thanked him for his dinner. And Chizowski almost threw down the spatula here and told me I got to come out to BC because he's going to make food that blows that away and everything. And but I got to say, aside from the fact that it was great to see Deuce again, that Deuce is someone that I probably haven't seen in 30 years, 31 years, going back to his last season in Capital District. Obviously, we keep in touch. He was a guest on the show. But it's really cool to see someone again in person. Like, you can keep in touch with them, but it's nice to see someone again, see how they're doing. And I met his wife. I met one of his, I think he has two sons. I met one of his sons there, and it was great. But Chizzer, if you're listening, that Deuce's poutine, man, that was off the charts. He made other food too, but I Deuce, I'll tell you, we come back, you just make that poutine. I'll make a meal out of it. It was splendid. But you know what? It was really good to spend some time with them. And I know we had the Canadians and Leafs on in the background, but I didn't care. I didn't need to watch the game. It was just nice to reminisce. And I think we were there maybe 3 hours or so. And it was funny because I didn't want to leave, but I knew the later we left, we had to drive up to North Bay that night. And I knew the later we left, the later we were going to get in. But unfortunately, you know, we did have to leave at some time. And, you know, it was getting back to what I said earlier about Chris Simon, and you talk about the transition that athletes make, and not just hockey players, but athletes make post-retirement from the sport. And I know some athletes have a harder time than others dealing with it. And the running theme in this trip with for us was seeing old friends, and they're all doing well. And that really makes me happy. And I don't think the transition was easy for any of them. I don't think it was. Well, it's not for me to say how difficult it was. But I know at this point, you know, Deucey is a great union job and looks happy. He's, you know, like I said, him and his wife still together after all these years. It was just good to see. It made me feel good. Like I said, last time I saw him, you know, you're in your 20s, you're playing minor league hockey. You think you got the world by the balls. Eventually, real life takes over. And I think that's where the transition comes in that is a little difficult for some people. But it was just amazing to see Deuce. And he's got a nice spot up there in London. He's got a great job. And it was hopefully, Deuce, hopefully it's not the last time. We're back up in London. Definitely want to get together again. And if you're down on the island, definitely we got to hook up. I don't cook. So like I say to everyone, come down to Long Island. We'll go to Vincent's, but it was just great. It was great to see Deuce after the London game. So London was a big success for us. After that, we head up to North Bay. Now that was the treacherous part of the trip. Believe it or not, Canada in March, generally they get a lot of snow. I know that's hard to believe. The only snow that we hit was on our way to North Bay and in North Bay. And North Bay at this time of year is probably, we're talking about snow in feet, not inches. And we basically got flurries from a certain point in the trip till the morning that we left, but it never accumulated. It was really unbelievable. Thanks to, you know, God must have been looking out for us because I really wanted to take this trip. And the only thing that really would have stopped us is the weather. And we got unbelievable weather. So we were real fortunate. So we get to North Bay. I think we ended up getting to North Bay around 3 in the morning. Next day, we're going to go see North Bay against Sudbury at the North Bay Memorial Gardens. Now, originally, we were going to go to the game with former guest of the show, Stone Cold Steve McLaren. Reached out to us earlier that morning. It's funny, he called, I was sound asleep, sent a text, "Are you still sleeping? What's going on?" And I was like, I texted him back. I'm like, "Yeah, we got in at like 3 in the morning." Chatted with Steve on the phone. He had to help out a friend, which I respect. So instead of coming to the game with us, he came by the hotel, bullshit for like an hour, hour and a half, had some coffee. Great to see Steve again. You know, again, all these guys, the running theme is I haven't seen him in probably 30 years. And the last time I saw Steve, he was with the Phantoms. And when I was living in Philly, and so maybe Steve is not 30 years, maybe he's 20, 25. But it's a long time. So like I said, we were going to go to the game together. He had to help out a buddy, so we spent some time there in the morning. Thanks, Steve, for coming by. Thanks for the coffee, of course. And thank you for the blade. It's going to make a fine addition to the basement. I really appreciate that. And for those of you wondering, fuck, Steve McLaren's hands are still... they're still paused. It's the first thing I noticed. I'm like, my God. Well, you know, he works with the Saints. He works for the city of North Bay. But, oh, my God. That's the first thing I noticed. It's like, Jesus, you got, like, bear paws there. It's unbelievable. And I think one of the coolest parts of this trip is that my son gets to meet a lot of these guys for the first time. And, you know, I was my son's age, really, when I met a lot of these guys. So it's pretty cool. And they're all great. They never met my son, but my son's involved in all the conversations. And as a matter of fact, when we were by Deuce's house, I went to take a piss because we were going to leave. And when I got out, Deuce and my son were talking. And then I sat down, I joined the conversation, and I think we were there like 45 more minutes. So it just shows it's not, you know, the guys, you know, I know the guys for years. My son's just meeting them, but everyone's involved in the conversation. It's not, this is Joe and I met his son. It's like we're a group. And I think that's a testament to the character of these guys. So Steve came by, you know, hour, hour and a half, bullshit a little bit, caught up a little bit. And then he was on his way. We were on our way to the North Bay Memorial Gardens. First thing I noticed about that arena, from the street, it looks like any rec center, like a local rec center in any neighborhood. I love that. I love that. Like Budweiser Gardens, it's an arena. It's an arena in the middle of the city. You can't miss it. The Memorial Gardens, it looks like any rec center that could be in your town. And I love the big arenas, but Canadian junior hockey, this is what I wanted to see. I wanted to see the old barns. And from the street, it looked like any sort of recreational center in any neighborhood, in any town in North America. I loved it. The second thing was, as they're directing you to park, we're just going, we're going. And I say to Joey, I'm like, shit, I hope they take U.S. dollars because we never converted any Canadian money. And they're kind of directing you, go here, go here, go here. But they don't take any money. And we had just spent, I think, $25 or $30 Canadian to park in London. And here they're directing you, but nobody's got money in their hand. Nobody has a ticket in their hand to put on your dashboard. So it was free to park. I was like, well, this is great. And it sort of took a little bit of the sting away, spending $30 to park in London. Because then you say, well, $15 yesterday, $15 today. You kind of make the math work in your head. But it was just like, I loved it. And it wasn't just because you didn't have to pay for parking. Again, it was, this is North Bay. It's North Bay, Ontario, where they're playing London. It's a rival. And obviously, I'm sure you don't pay to park when they play anybody, but this is the kind of place I wanted to go to. I wanted to see this small town Canada junior hockey, and it was great. And you walk in. It's definitely the smallest barn on the trip that we went to. And you walk in, and even during the warm-up, there was like kind of this us against them vibe, which I can't even imagine what that must have been like back in the day when North Bay had Dennis Bonvy or McLaren, and Sudbury was coming in with Gary Kopal or any of these guys. Like, it must have been electric. It had to be electric, because I'm walking in now in 2024 where the game is nowhere near as physical, but it was still this North Bay. It was North Bay in that arena that day. And there were a decent amount of Sudbury fans that obviously made the trip from Sudbury, but the arena was North Bay. It was North Bay, and it was the community that had come out to see their battalion play the rival Sudbury Wolves. And that is exactly what I wanted to get out of this trip. And I think for people that are up in Canada that live near junior teams, this is sort of second nature, because this is what you grew up with. For myself, growing up in New York, spending time in Philadelphia, it was always around major league teams. So it was a major league vibe, like a professional vibe. So for me, just walking into these arenas where it's the town against the other town, that might be second nature to those of you up in Canada in junior cities, but for me, it's not. And I loved it. That's exactly what I wanted to see. And then, of course, I got to give credit. Out of all the games we went to, North Bay has a mascot named Sarge. I don't think it's Chris Pryor, because that's his nickname. I don't think it's him in the suit. But this guy, whatever he's making, earns his money. This guy is working his ass off from before the anthem till after the game. This guy Sarge is nonstop. And it could be a lady under there, I don't know, but obviously the mascot is a man. And the kids just love him. There were a ton of kids in the crowd. It was a Sunday matinee game, and obviously they liked the hockey, but a lot of these kids, the younger kids, they just want to see Sarge, and Sarge was everywhere. So if anybody from North Bay is listening, whatever Sarge is making, he's not making enough. This guy, probably the hardest working mascot north of Gritty with the Flyers, but it was great to see. So every move Sarge made, you hear all the kids react. It was fun. Now, old school game here. 38 seconds into the game, Liam Amesby drops the gloves with Andre Anania. I should get these names right, or Anania. I don't know, and I should know, especially because it sounds like an Italian kid. Drops the gloves 38 seconds into the game, and Joey and I look at each other and go, well, you never know. Maybe this will be a little more violent than the night before in London. It wasn't, but it was a good game. It was a lot of fun. Some goals scored, and one guy went short side. I don't remember who it was. But I mean, really, when the hockey now is much different than the hockey that I grew up with, but what was new to us is we're seeing hockey guys that are already professionals. What we're watching now, which was different for us anyway, is we're watching prospects, guys trying to get to the next level, either guys that were drafted and they're trying to still impress the teams that drafted them, prospects hoping to get drafted and impressing the league, or guys who realize maybe they're playing for their hometown team, they're not going to progress any further than this, and this is the pinnacle for them. So again, for those of you in junior cities, you're used to that, but for us, we're not, and it was almost like a breath of fresh air to see that. And the games were fun. I mean, obviously, listen, if you're going to ask me, would I rather see North Bay and Sudbury or in 2024 or North Bay and Sudbury in, you know, during the Steve McLaren era or the Dennis Bonvy era, yeah, I'd rather see the games back then. But for us, we're used to the pro game here. This was a lot of fun. It really was. So as far as the food report, we went to the stand, and for those of us in the States, their concession stands, again, this is a small barn, their concession stands reminded me of the Little League concession stand at your local baseball field. It looked like there were high school kids working it, and we both ate for $23 Canadian, and I turned to Joey and I say, $23 Canadian. And we both got this look on our face, and the girl kind of looked at us, and I'm like, oh, I said, no. I said, if we were doing this at our local rink, we might be able to buy two sodas for $23. And she goes, oh, because most people think our prices are high. And we were like $23 Canadian. I think that's like $2 US. And we were able to eat for that. And again, I got the standard poutine in North Bay at the arena. Highly recommend it. It was excellent. So if you're in North Bay, you're at a battalion game, definitely get the poutine. And the one of the other things I liked about the arena is they have team photos of a lot of the teams. I guess every team. I was really looking at the team, you know, the McLaren years, the Bonnevie years, those teams. But they have team photos all on the concourse there. So I took a few pictures. And I'll post those on social media shortly. Now, Sudbury had a few players, as I mentioned, Andre Anania. Again, I'm fucking up that name probably. I'm sorry, Andre. Devin Morrow, Matthew Mania. And North Bay had Anthony Romani and Dom DeVincentis. And if I'm butchering these names, I'm sorry about it. I just want to acknowledge the fact that, you know, they're Italian. They have Italian blood. And again, I'm biased. I'm going to pump up the Paisanos and some names for you to look for. So after the game, we just we went back, grabbed dinner, went back to the hotel. I think the Islanders played the Ducks that night, and we watched that game. We were fortunate enough to get that game. Now, the plan the next day, there wasn't any games. It was a Monday, no games. We were going to head to Sudbury, do sort of like a Shoresy tour. We hope to get into the Sudbury Community Arena, grab some pictures, and then after that, kind of drive around Sudbury, take some pictures. I know, there are a lot of the places you see in Shoresy are actual places in Sudbury, and I love that about the show. It's sort of like a Chamber of Commerce advertisement for Sudbury. And we just wanted to go and take some pictures of some of the places that were there, and of course, finish the tour at Pepe Panini before heading to Ottawa. That morning, I tried for about 15 minutes to get anybody on the phone with the Wolves just to make sure that we'd at least be able to get into the arena and get some pictures. I didn't want to make the trip because to go to Sudbury is going in the opposite direction to Ottawa. I would have done it if I knew we were going to get into the arena. But without knowing that, the last thing I wanted to do was drive to Sudbury and get shut out and then just get a picture of the outside of the arena, which I can get on the internet, and then make the way to Ottawa. It would have made the trip a lot longer. I would have been pretty pissed off. Not at Sudbury, just at the fact that I don't know, if these arenas are locked, I don't blame them. But just the fact that we would have driven an hour and a half that way to come back an hour and a half just to hit North Bay and then drive an additional 3 hours or so to Ottawa. I wasn't going to do it. So unfortunately, we did not get there. There is no food in the world I would drive 3 hours for. I would just, which essentially would have been driving to Sudbury for a panini and then driving back. So Sudbury is still on our list next time we do an OHL trip. So because I couldn't get anyone on the phone from the Wolves to make sure I could get into the arena, we just headed towards Ottawa. So the next day we were going to see the 67s play. And of course, every arena we go to, we have to buy merch. I was going to get a t-shirt. Joey is a big time puck collector, so he wanted to get pucks. So we have the day to kill. So we said, well, why don't we go to the team store first? And we'll do that so we don't have to do it the next day. And that's what we did. We drove in there and we went to the team store, got some merch. Now, in Ottawa, we ran into another old friend from Capital District, former guest of the show, episode 66, guest Rick Hayward. Rick was kind enough. Rick's one of those guys when I interviewed him and we were done catching up again from knowing him in Capital District, he says, oh, if you're ever in Ottawa, you got to stay here. We got plenty of room. You're going to stay here. And I know a lot of people say that, and maybe 50-50 if they mean it or not. Well, as soon as I told Rick what we were doing, he's like, are you coming to Ottawa? Yes. All right, you're staying here. And I said, well, we're going to be there two nights. He's like, I don't care how long you're here. You're staying here. I said, okay. And then on top of that, he says, what's your you and your son's favorite dish? And I said, well, I said, you don't have to, don't go nuts. I said, we're fine. We eat anything. We'll eat pizza. We don't care. He's like, no, no, no. I want to know. Okay. Chicken parm, which made him happy because that is apparently his favorite dish. So he goes, all right, Monday night when you get in, we're having chicken parm. I'm making chicken parm. Okay. No argument from me. So Joey and I go and we go to TD Place, the team stores down the block. And then after that, we head back. Rick lives outside of Ottawa. We head back towards his place. We got there just, he had been home. He was grabbing a shower. And we met his wife, who is a terrific woman. Again, no names. She doesn't need her name out there. And what I found out was Rick has his own business. He builds houses. And I wish, this is a part of trip I think I wish my wife was there for, because my wife loves those HGTV shows where they're doing houses and stuff like that. We're driving down this road and we see this giant house and we're looking to see where, you know, the address. And I go, wouldn't it be something if that was the house? And Joey goes, yeah, that's the house. So I was like, oh my God, okay. Turn around, make a U-turn, turn around, go up the driveway. And I found out later on while we were bullshitting that Rick had built that house. And that's what he does for a living. Which I think is amazing because I am always, as I get older, and it's probably been this way for 20 or 30 years, I am fascinated by things I can't do. And you're thinking, what you're thinking right now is exactly right. Well, I can't do much. So things that I cannot do fascinate me. It's like the time I met Kyle Farnsworth and I asked him the immortal question, what does it feel like to throw a ball 100 miles an hour? Like when, after I asked it, I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Like what is if he does it, he could do it in his sleep, but I can't throw a ball 100 miles an hour. So I actually said to him, I said, I know that's a stupid question. I guess the better question is, what is it like when you throw the ball and you hit triple digits, like for the first time in your, that's really what I meant, was like, what's that feeling like when you hit triple digits on the gun? But of course, it first came out was, what's it like to throw a ball 100 miles an hour? Oh God, fucking embarrassing, right? But so Rick builds these houses and, it's incredible to see, you know, you see the finished result. You drive around any neighborhood, you see the finished result. And as a matter of fact, the next day after the game, we went to his wife's cousin's house, which is a house that Rick built, which is unbelievable. I mean, phenomenal. And then after that, we went to his current job site that he's working on, which is basically, it would be the bones, a similar house to the house where his wife's cousin lives. This would sort of be the in progress part of it. And I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. Like we're in the bones of a house right now, and I already know what it's going to end up looking like. And I mean, just these beautiful houses, just phenomenal, right? Like these are houses on Long Island that would be well over $1 million, maybe $1.5 million. I don't know. These are big, beautiful houses, and the fact that that's what he does for a living, it just is amazing to me. I mean, these are masterpieces. And so we get there, we're there Monday night and we're talking, and I never met Rick's wife before. She's an environmental engineer. And we started talking about how my son, you know, last year got his master's degree in mechanical engineering. So they were, it was four people in the room and two of them were really smart. And then it was, and I'm not one of them, but it was fun. She's really fun to talk to. And, so that was fun seeing her and Joey talk. And, you know, like I keep going back to the same thing, to see Rick doing so well, you know, see Deuce doing so well, you know, Steve, we talked about it in the interview, Steve McLaren, he's working for the town, he's doing well. It's good. It's good to see these guys post career doing very well. It's very, I don't want to say it warms my heart, but it warms my heart to see these guys doing so well and to see what Rick is doing with these houses and, you know, running his own business. From what I understand, his wife is so well established in the engineering industry. She kind of runs her own show there too. So it's good to see. It's really, really good to see. And so one of the things that Rick had said is, oh, when you come here, I have some stuff for your basement. And I was like, okay, perfect. And I get there and I walked right past it. He had the stuff in a basket and he brings the basket in. And he goes, oh, he goes, she's going to be so happy when you take this away. And I said, well, I'll leave you. It was a nice basket. I said, I'll leave you the basket. I'll take what's in there. So, so thank you, Rick, for contributing to the basement. And, we started talking with my son and Rick said, oh, do you collect this stuff? Do you collect autographs? And Joey said, no, I pretty much like pucks. And he goes, oh, hold on one second. I'll be right back. He goes upstairs to his office. He comes down with two boxes. And one box has AHL pucks from when Rick played in the American League. And one box has QMJHL pucks from when he played in the Q. And I said, oh, Joey, take a puck or two. And Rick's like, no, take them all. They're all yours. It's my gift to you. And Joey's like, wow, this is amazing. And he doesn't know, like, Joey pretty much knows the NHL teams. He doesn't know a lot of the minor league teams besides the Phantoms or Bridgeport. And especially a lot of these teams aren't even, the pucks that he has are not even in existence anymore. So it was really cool. There's probably some hard to find pucks there. And of course, the way my son thinks, he's got all these pucks now, so he's starting to think he's got a 3D printer. Can I make this kind of display for all these pucks with a base that looks like hockey sticks? And I'm just like, oh, my God, the way this kid's wheels turn, it's really outside of how I'm able to think. It was just to see the wheels turning, it really was a proud dad moment for sure. And so that night we had the chicken parmesan. Rick accomplished something that has never been done in all my years on this planet. I was actually full the next day. The chicken was phenomenal. Talk about Chizzer. I told you when talking about Deuce's thing, I know you're a master in the kitchen, but these boys came. They came to play and they brought it. So when I end up in BC, you got a lot to live up to, and I know you can do it. I've seen what you can do, but they set the bar very high. I mean, this probably the best chicken parmesan I've ever had in my life. I mean, honestly, it was unbelievable. If I lived near Rick, I'd be 500 pounds. It's not even close. It was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. What a the guy builds houses and he can cook. I mean, this is quite the catch for any lady out there. But his wife snatched him up. So the next day, Rick, his friend John, Joey, and myself headed to TD Place for an afternoon affair between Ottawa and the Barrie Colts. Rick and John, it was sort of like the typical guy relationship. From the time John got in the car, it was just the two of them ripping on each other, which is basically every male relationship. It was hilarious to listen to them. It was almost like they had their own YouTube channel. It was a lot of fun to listen to. John's a great guy, and it's no wonder why they're buddies with each other. So before the game, Rick had mentioned he wanted to go to this place called Nate's. It's near Canadian Parliament. They have smoked meat and, of course, poutine. And actually, I think Rick, John, and myself all had the same thing. I think we all got Reubens and poutine. Joey got a burger, probably a bacon cheeseburger, and poutine. The food was excellent. If you're in the area, and no, Nate's is not a sponsor of this show, but if you're near TD Place, or if you're near Canadian Parliament and you want a nice place to stop and get food reasonably priced and good portions, I think it's called Nate's Deli, but it's a sit-down place. I'm sure you can get takeout, but it's a sit-down place. We actually sat and we ate, and the food was great. It was so great, in fact, that none of us were really hungry when we got to the arena. Of course, I did have a bag of all dressed chips, of course. And I was set for the day. So going to the game, so it's a big arena for junior hockey, and it was, but I'm also looking at it going, well, this is where the Senators played when they came back into the NHL. And I always remembered watching it on TV. They had the one side was the crowd where the fans, and then the other side, there was always like this little bit of fans and then this giant wall above them, and it almost looked like a giant HVAC thing behind it. I never ever knew what it was. So actually seeing that in real life 30 years later, was interesting, because then I'm like, oh, that's what that was. Okay, I see what that is. So it's a good size venue. It was an afternoon game. So as far as atmosphere goes, I think a lot of people were still working. There were a decent amount of kids at the game. But when Ottawa did well, it was loud. But I'm sure during a night game against a rival team, it's probably a pretty jumping place, pretty jumping venue, Ottawa. The cool thing about this trip is you get to see a lot of these franchises that are legendary, not just in the OHL, but in hockey as well. Now, I was hoping that Brian Kilray, Islander fans of a certain age will remember that he was an assistant coach here. He came from the OHL. He's an OHL legend. Brian Kilray needs no one. You don't need me to talk about Brian Kilray if you're from Canada. But he spent a little time here with the Islanders, went back to Canada. And I was hoping that I'd see him at the game. He wasn't there that day, unfortunately. I would love to have gotten a picture with him. But Brian Kilray was well represented on the walls of that arena, the way that they did it in TD Place. They got a lot of 67's history on every inch of that wall of that arena. And Brian Kilray, of course, I'm not even sure he has enough wall space there for his resume for what a legend he is. But also, for Islander fans, Dennis Podvin occupies a lot of the wall space in Ottawa, as he should. So I got some pictures of that, and I will post that on social media as well. So Ottawa jumped out to a 1-0 lead very early. Then Barry took over, scored 3 unanswered goals. But after that, it was kind of like Barry didn't take their foot off the gas, but then Ottawa said, all right, we're in a game here. Ottawa turned it up a notch. They dominated the rest of the game. Unfortunately, it was a penalty-free game up until the third period. And that's not to say that penalties couldn't have been called. They could have. So when I say unfortunately there weren't penalties, but I actually want to give the referee, the officials, credit, because there were certain things that could have been called, but they let them play, which was good to see. Now, a lot of times you let the boys play, it might lead to some fisticuffs. It didn't really happen. But in the third period, Barry's Keshawn Atchison was called for an intentional check to the head, and Matthew Mayich came in to stand up for his teammate. So that was good to see. Took a while to actually get the penalty sorted. I guess they were trying to decide if it was intentional or not. They eventually deemed it was intentional, but it was a nice win for the home team. People left happy that day. Your Italian players, for Barry, there is a Jack Broughty and a Chris Grisolia. For Ottawa, there's an Ian Micheloni, Frankie Morelli, and Luca Pinelli. It's good to see all this Italian blood coming up through the pipeline. And maybe we'll see some of these guys in the NHL at some point. Of course, best of luck to the Paisanos. And then after the game, it was just back to Rick is like, what do you want to do after the game? And, you know, this is a guy who worked Monday. Then we were there Monday night. Tuesday's at the game. He's got to work early Wednesday. And we were just like, man, let's just go back to your place. We'll chill out. We'll get a pizza or something, and we'll just relax. So that's what we did. Mrs. Hayward was in Toronto. Her daughter was on school break, so I think she went to see her daughter in Toronto, went to see Rick's son. He's also there. So she wasn't there. It was just the three of us, and we just kind of lounged around the house, watched some hockey, and Rick found a DVD with some of his old scraps. So that was something that we watched. We were enjoying that. He was giving his commentary while we were watching it, and showing Joey how it used to be done old school style back in the Quebec League and the IHL. So that was fun to, a lot of the stuff, I guess all of it, Joey had never seen before. So I guess it was pretty cool for him to actually watch these videos with the guy in the video actually giving his analysis and the backstories behind all that. So that's what we ended up doing after the game. The next day, Rick, again, it's kind of like, hey, we'll just get Tim Hortons on the way. He's like, no, I'm making you guys breakfast. I'll make you guys bacon and egg. Bacon and eggs, okay? Yeah, of course. Are you kidding me? And, of course, it's not just pop the bacon in the microwave. Rick, he makes the bacon in the oven, and it was like these giant pieces of bacon. Like, holy shit. it was we ate very well at the Hayward House. That is for sure. Terrific breakfast with Rick. He headed to work after that. Joey and I got ready to head to Peterborough. And just again, I want to take this opportunity to thank Rick and his wife for having us. It was very nice of them to host us. And you know, like I say, I said it to Deuce. I said it to Stone Cold. I say it to Rick. You guys ever on Long Island? I can't cook for you, but we can go to Vincent's. It was fun. It was great to catch up, talking about some old war stories, you know, back in the day, especially the stuff in Capital District that I may have been there for. So that was a lot of fun, and I want to thank Rick and his wife for having us. So with our full bellies after that great breakfast, we get in the car, we head to Peterborough. And actually, the ironic thing is all the miles we put on the car to go and doing these long drives, we did not see any, I guess, is it the RCMP that patrols the highways? I'm not sure. The police. We didn't see any police on any of these highways. First police officer we saw was actually in Peterborough. And I think it was a City of Peterborough cop. And I'm saying that for no other reason other than you think with all the miles that we put on, we'd see law enforcement out there. But no. And it wasn't like they were needed. People were driving normal on these roads. It was not anything we're like, oh my God, where are they? It was just something I noticed when we saw the cop in Peterborough on the side of the road. We're like, holy shit, that's the first one we've seen. And think about all the driving we had done. Get to Peterborough. It's a night game. We got there early. So, of course, the first stop was to Walmart. We have to stock up on the Canadian snacks. Why down here we have not, like, stolen the idea for all dress chips? Just import this stuff, man. Ketchup chips are starting to make an appearance. And Wegmans has ketchup chips. I think Target had kettle cooked ketchup chips, which were okay, but not like the old Dutch. So, of course, any trip to Buffalo or Canada, because if I go to Buffalo, I'm definitely going into Canada to buy some stuff. We have to stop and get Canadian snacks. So, got the big basket. We got all dressed chips, bags of ketchup chips. Now, of course, they're all gone. So, in case Darren is listening to this, I can definitely use some more if you're so inclined. Dominic loves to do his research on international snacks. So he gave us a list of stuff we had to buy. So we leave Walmart with like four bags of goodies. And our next stop is the aptly named beer store. Because down here on Long Island, it's very difficult to find Moosehead. And that is my beer of choice. So I know I can find it up there. Grab some Moosehead, throw it in the car. And then after that, we just grab a quick bite to eat. And then we head to the Peterborough Memorial Center. Now, if you've never been there, I will tell you, inside the Peterborough Memorial Center is the Peterborough and District Sports Hall of Fame. You must get there early to go see this Hall of Fame. It is unbelievable. And it's not, obviously, it's Canada. So there's a good amount of hockey in the Peterborough Hall of Fame. But it's everything. Every kind of sport you can think of is represented in this Hall of Fame. So if you're heading to a Peterborough Pete's game, make sure you get there in time to go see this Hall of Fame. If you're an Islanders fan, there's a Steve Webb game jersey in there. There's a picture of him in there. There's some other guys in there. I took pictures of their stuff. I was a little disappointed I didn't see any Matt Carkner representation in there. When I told Matt about my trip, I told him, you know, one of the places we're going is Peterborough. I plan to throw your name around. I'm sure it's going to open a lot of doors for me. And he said, don't plan on that happening, but enjoy the square corners of the arena. And I told that to Joey, and that was like the first thing he remembered when we got there. We got to go look at the square corners. And I guess it was similar to the Seattle Center Arena where the T-Birds used to play. I remember seeing that in the fight videos. They had the square corners there too. So, of course, we had to go see the square corners. I want to thank Ryan Barnes, former assistant coach of the Peterborough Petes, and the current GM, Mike Oakey, for taking care of us with tickets. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate that. Unfortunately, I didn't get to meet Mike by the time we had got there and I had asked someone. Mike was already up at his in his box. And from what I was told, he's in game mode and nobody bothers him. And so I sent him a text thanking him, and he got back to me. And hopefully next time we're up there, I get to meet you. And but none of that happens without Ryan Barnes doing us a solid favor. So thanks to both of you gentlemen for the tickets. We appreciate that, and had a great time. So, of course, before we go to our seats, we have to hit the team store, get some more merch. After, of course, the Hall of Fame was unbelievable. So in the game, now Peterborough was out of the playoffs. And I think Kingston is either in or they at that point or they were fighting for a playoff spot. So I actually had said to Joey, this might be the game that breaks our streak, because up until this point, went to three games, the three home teams won. So this might be the game where the road team wins. And Kingston looked like they were going to do that early. They jumped out to an early lead and kind of looked like that's the way it was going to go. But to Peterborough's credit, they kept battling. And this is what I'm talking about, the difference between watching junior hockey and the pros. A lot of times it seems like you're getting paid for it, and you'd like to think, if you romanticize it enough, that they're going to keep battling and go team and all this other stuff. And that's not always the case, but as I said, with these junior players and the different trajectories of their careers, Peterborough really, they played their ass off in this game, and they eventually won 5-3, and the fans loved it. Really cool barn to see. Like, a lot of these, so Peterborough, I just from the eye test, looked like it was bigger than Kingston, but smaller than both Ottawa and London. And I just love the going to barn like Kingston, North Bay, that's what I meant. North Bay and Peterborough. And then the difference between those two smaller barns and then to London and Ottawa, the bigger barns. And it was just, you got to see different aspects of it. And again, with Peterborough, you go in there and you see all the little kids wearing their Pete stuff and different things, and they have their little thunder sticks. And it was just very cool to see. It was a really cool atmosphere. And again, I go back to thinking what it must have been like to see Matt Karkner play for the Petes, or Steve Webb, or Matt Johnson, how cool it must have been to see Matt Johnson and Dennis Bonvie go at it, or Matt Johnson and Eric Karen, see these guys going at it back in the heyday. It must have been unbelievable. I'm sure those games were like, people were packed to the rafters. And see, it's just, you go to these places like Peterborough where there's an absolute ton of tradition. And for people that come, well, used to come to the Nassau Coliseum, obviously there's still the Islander tradition at UBS, but when you walked into Nassau Coliseum, that's where the championships were. That's where the legends played. And even though UBS Arena is a much nicer arena, it's not where they played. And to walk into Peterborough Arena, see the Petes, that's the Peterborough Memorial Center. Actually, I want to give it its proper name, and know their tradition and everything that's happened in that arena, for someone like myself, just thinking about the past players who played there. It was actually pretty cool. And like I said, Peterborough battled from the opening whistle, really turned it on second and third period, ended up winning 5-3. So we were 4-0 home teams winning. All the OHL games we went to, the home team won 4-0. There was potential for some fireworks in the game, but nothing really materialized. One guy that we noticed was Jacob Battaglia from Kingston. I think he's a prospect. Maybe he's a second-round guy. Also, Gabriel Frasca and Mason Vicari. No real Italian names for Peterborough. That was a little disappointing, but hopefully that changes. Probably my favorite part of the Peterborough game, I know maybe I'm guilty of it, and I think a lot of people nowadays are guilty of it. It's using the word legend. And what we did meet, we met a hockey legend in Peterborough. He's probably rolling his eyes right now if he's listening, but if he's not a hockey legend, look, if you're not a hockey legend, you're at least a Peterborough legend and an OHL legend, and that's Jeff Toohey. And do yourself a favor. Go to Elite Prospects and put in the name Jeff Toohey right now, and then you'll see why I'm saying he's at least, at the very least, a Peterborough legend. Jeff is currently a scout for Florida. And Jeff has pretty much done everything you can do at the OHL level. And we were able to meet up with Jeff after the first period, after the second period. And just, it was like we had been friends. That's the impression I got. We had known each other forever. And just listening to his stories, like I would throw out some names and he would tell me different stories. And, you know, we talked about Sean Thornton and Karkner and Matt Johnson. He was talking about Ty Domi. Just some of the names that played for Peterborough. It was probably 25 minutes worth of stories between the two intermissions. I literally could have sat there and listened to him talk all night. And hopefully once he retires, I can get him on the show and we could talk. I mean, this could be like a 5-part episode. Jeff, he is a, look at his elite prospects. He's Peterborough since I believe 1980. So, you know, this guy has seen everything. He's done everything. And now he's scouting for the Panthers. And a tremendous person. And forget about if he ever does the show or not. I may have to call Jeff like once a month and just have him tell me some stories of some of the old Peterborough stories. And one thing I showed my son. So I went to the elite prospects and I showed him. I said, I know he rolled his eyes or he said, well, when I said, you know, Peterborough legend. I said, but Joey, look at this. And I scrolled and I scrolled and I scrolled. This guy is a hockey lifer. He is a Peterborough legend. And it made me think of the people, the 20-somethings now who like analytics, and in their Twitter bio, they put scout. And I just started laughing. I did. I just, anyone, listen, if you put scout in your bio and you're not making money from an organization, you're not a scout. You're a fan. You watch hockey. I watch hockey. I would never put scout in my bio. And it made me laugh because I'm literally in the presence of a hockey lifer who has done everything, including scouting. And I almost found it insulting that some nerd who likes numbers is going to put scout in his bio when I'm literally a foot away from someone who, in terms of scouting, would just dummy you. But you like to add numbers together, but you want to call yourself a scout. And it was not lost on me. It was not lost on me. Just, excuse me, the humor in that. But meeting Jeff was unbelievable, and meeting him in person, we had spoken through DMs before that, and man, what a storyteller. What an absolute storyteller. And Florida, you know, to me, Florida's been a very successful franchise as of late, and it's not a surprise when you have guys like Jeff doing your scouting and Sean Thornton involved in the organization. Paul Maurice, doesn't surprise me with hockey people like that, that Florida is a perennial contender now. Not at all. Doesn't surprise me at all. So, Jeff, it was great to meet you, and I certainly hope that is not the last time. So, as I said, now, 4 games down, 4 home team wins, and Joey and I are hoping that our streak ends because the next day we are going to Buffalo, the KeyBank Center, as the Sabres host the Islanders. We are hoping that the streak ends. So our game day began. Thank you to Jason Smurf Christie, assistant coach of the Sabres, allowed us to get into the morning skate to watch both teams skate. And so if you haven't ever done that, the home team skates first. And we get there as the Sabres are coming out. And you know what we saw with the Sabres? The Sabres were acting like a team of guys who get paid to play a kids game. They were out there having fun. They were smiling. They were laughing. Now, they were practicing. They weren't goofing around. I don't want that to be the impression. They were doing what they had to do, but they were having fun. There were lots of laughs. There were lots of smiles. This is a team fighting for a playoff spot. And it just looked like a group of adults getting paid handsomely to play a kids game. And they all looked like they were getting along. It was like what you'd imagine a hockey practice would be. First of all, Jesus Christ, Tage Thompson, what a horse that guy is. Oh, my God. The guy's massive. And he's got, just watching him in practice and just seeing him this is a guy, you know, like even in between drills when he's just farting around with the puck, like what a talent. What an absolute stud that guy is. Like, oh my God, he's so, so talented. Even in practice, fun guy to watch. And then we got a close-up look at the newest Sabre, Bowen Byram. Now, you've heard me talk about Bo before. Obviously, the son of another former guest, another former Capital District Islander, teammate of Rick Hayward and Wayne Doucette, Sean Byram. And I saw Sean's wife on her Instagram story had a picture out her airplane window going off to Buffalo. And I was hoping that Sean was also on the trip with her, but he didn't make the trip. But I did end up catching up with Sean's wife, who I've spoken to in the past. Great lady, terrific lady, really proud hockey mom. You could kind of see that. You know, a lot of times with these kids, the reason why Bowen is so successful is because of the sacrifices that Sean and his wife make. And any one of these hockey kids, the sacrifices, any hockey player, the parents have made sacrifices. And you kind of just see when you mention Bo, like her eyes light up. Like, that's the baby boy. And you could just see how proud she was. And we were going to catch up later, but when she came to look for us, we were out getting a soda or something, and we ended up not talking for as long as I hoped for. But hopefully with Bowen in Buffalo, I can't imagine he's not going to be here for the next 10 years. He's not going to be there for the next 10 years. So I'm sure we'll have ample opportunity to get together. And hopefully Sean, I suggested to her that with Buffalo really not being that far from Long Island, maybe they come here next year for the alumni weekend. Sean did play some games for the Islanders. And if the schedule allows, maybe come here for the alumni weekend and then head up to Buffalo and see Bowen. So that would be great if that came to fruition. But it was great to talk to her. And just watching Bowen in practice, again, these guys, when they're not doing a set drill and they're just messing around with the puck, it's like watching a maestro, like next level stuff. They're so, things they do second nature. And once you get to the NHL, you're elite. I don't care if you played one game or 1,000 games. So the stuff that you do, it's like, for someone like me, we just sit back and watch and I'm like amazed. But you see guys like Tage Thompson and you see guys like Bowen Byram. And when they're, even when they're doing drills, when they're not doing drills, picking corners, doing this, doing that, just stuff they do with the puck on their stick. It's amazing to watch. It really was. It was a lot of fun. And then seeing Smurf and everything, it was great. I haven't seen him since, I think, 2 years ago. Well, I saw him earlier this year for like 5 seconds at the Islander game, but I saw him, I think, 2 years ago at the Garden at a morning skate. Seeing him, he's a goofball, but a good kind of goof. We're all goofballs, you know, just seeing him. And if you want to check out another hockey DB, check out Jason Christie's hockey DB and scroll down to the coaching and see the road he took to get to be an assistant coach in the NHL. If there's someone who worked their ass off to get to where they are, it's Jason Christie cutting his bones in the minors, cutting his teeth, making his bones in the minors. That's what I meant to say, to get this opportunity to be an assistant coach in the NHL. So it's good to see. I mean, it's a road. He took a long road to get there, so I'm really happy for him. Now, after the Sabres went off, the Zamboni comes out, surfaces the ice. Now the Islanders come on. And I was a little surprised that it was optional, because they were coming off the game in LA, which was a total disaster. And I understand it's late in the season, the guys need a break, but I really thought after that Kings game it would be a full squad. And it was optional. And optional means it's the two goalies and the scratches. But one thing I wasn't surprised at, Matt Martin, he was at the optional skate. I mean, what, you've heard me talk about Matt Martin before. I don't need to tell you what I think about Matt Martin. Matt Martin at an optional skate. Anders Lee also was there, but not for very long. Those were the only two guys aside from played. I don't even remember Sorokin or Varlamov. I think Sorokin. That actually played in the game that night. Everyone else was going to be a scratch. So they were there. And the difference was the Islanders, even though it was not many players there, that was business. That was all business. You didn't see the smiles I mean, it wasn't like they were frowning, don't get me wrong, but the Sabres were a lot looser. And I guess after that Kings game, I was wondering, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing where there's a lot of pressure. And then here comes the old man, and I saw Lou was there, and I'm like, okay. And I don't know if you're allowed to have fun around Lou. Like, I don't know. But as soon as Lou came out, I nudged Joey, and I said, uh-oh, the old man's here. So I always wondered if that's why it was very businesslike. But, it was, I don't know. Like I said, you can't do this stuff on the island. So I don't know if that's how it always is. I would like to think that a normal Islander skate is similar to the Sabres, where they can have fun and be happy being around each other, playing the game. So I'm not about to say that it's not like that. I'm sure it is. But that particular day, as soon as I saw the old man, I said, all right, nobody, especially after the LA game, there's not going to be a ton of having fun here, I guess. But that was the difference I noticed. And so after that, every time we go to Buffalo, we got to stop at Dave and Adams. And then I discovered a new place that'll be a stop everywhere, Western New York Collectibles. That is like a museum. I know he's a store and he sells stuff, but that place is like a museum. I can highly recommend visiting that, especially if you're around my age, because there's a lot of stuff in there from when I was a kid. It was very cool. So, but Dave and Adams is always a stop. Western New York Collectibles will now always be a stop. And then after that, it was Joey and I headed to Bar Bill for an early supper. Then it was off to the game. So we get to the game, and what is now required every time we go to Buffalo is a visit with Tim Graham. Every time we go now, whether it's meeting up for a meal or meeting up at a game, we must bullshit with Tim Graham. He's one of my favorite people in the world. And as much as I dislike a lot of the current hockey writers, including the current guy in charge of the hockey department of The Athletic, I am a Athletic subscriber because of Tim Graham, because Tim Graham is phenomenal. He's a great writer and an even better human. And I've been following Tim's career since he was at the Buffalo News. And then the last time we were here, we had dinner with Tim and he brought along Jonah Bronstein. Those two guys make the Tim Graham and Friends podcast something special. So I got to see Jonah again, which was great because Jonah had a recent health scare and he looks great. And it was great to see Jonah. Great to bullshit with Tim for a couple of minutes. And during the morning skate. And then it was a pleasant surprise. I ran into Sal Capaccio and his lovely family. And it was a quick hello because he was going to see other friends. Next thing I know, Sal's texting me. His son left his Sabres flag at the seats they were sitting in. Wanted to know if it was still there. Joey went, rescued the flag. Sal came down, sat with him for a few minutes. And if you're not familiar with Sal Capaccio, Sal is basically the mayor of Buffalo. Everybody knows Sal Capaccio. The guy sitting behind me was friends with Sal. Sal is the mayor of Buffalo. Sat with Sal for a few minutes. Great to see him. We took a picture that he put on social media. And it was great to see Sal. It was unplanned. I knew I was going to see Tim, as I said, required now. But it was fun to see Sal there. And we sat next to Jason Christie's son, Jax. Good kid. He plays for the there's Penny again. She's going at it. Someone's coming to the door. So I'm going to talk over Penny. Well, no, she's very loud. By the way, Penny is not a Doberman. You might think she is, but she's not. But she's our watchdog. So Dominic just got home, so Penny has to bark. And Dominic's hearing me say this. I hope Dominic doesn't make her bark like he likes to do. But anyway, after seeing Tim and Jonah and Sal and Stacy earlier, well, and then meeting Jax, like I said, Jax currently plays for the Junior Sabres. I believe he's 17 years old. Really, really good kid. Very polite, very fun to talk to. And I hope, Jax, if you're listening, I hope be following your career. Hopefully you progress to the point you want to. Great to sit with him. Wish him all the best in his hockey journey. And that is exactly where the fun ended in Buffalo. Because once the game started, we get to watch the Sabres dummy the Islanders 4-0, and it wasn't even that close. This game was an absolute nightmare to witness in person, which sucked because it was a pretty good crowd, and there were a lot of Islanders fans there. So it was a little disappointing. The highlight of the night was Connor Clifton laid out Pierre Engvall. I don't know why Pierre Engvall's still dressing every night or almost every night. And Anders Lee came in and exacted revenge on Clifton. That was it, man. That was absolutely it. So after the game, well, we didn't, and we left a few minutes before the game ended because we were going to drive home that night. So we decided we're going to try to drive home. It's 6.5 hours from Buffalo to where we are on the island here. Figured let's start driving. Worst case, maybe we have to stop at a rest stop and rest area, maybe grab a quick nap or whatever. But halfway through the drive, we saw a sign for Sheetz. If you're not familiar with Sheetz, Sheetz is an excellent store. It's basically a Wawa for central and western Pennsylvania. You can pretty much get anything you want there. Sandwiches, coffees, drinks, anything. It's sort of like a mini supermarket. And Sheetz is excellent. It's not Wawa, though, but it's good. It's good, but it's definitely not Wawa. So I get my giant coffee, and I thought we had longer to go, and that's when Joey says, no, we're 2.5 hours from home. That was it. We made the trip home, got in around 5 in the morning, I think, and that was it. So unfortunately for us, the home team won every game because, and I say unfortunately because Buffalo was the home team for the Islanders game, but the trip was amazing, and all told, we probably logged about 2,300 miles from the moment we left our house to the moment we got back. It was probably a little bit over 2,300 miles. And, you know, it was a great father-son trip, memories that will last a lifetime. I wish the little guy could have been on the trip with us, but he couldn't. But as I said earlier, all that means is that we'll have to do a trip of our own at some point. But, you know, for me, the most important thing in my life is being a father. So to get a week away with one of the boys and just doing this was amazing for me. And I think he had a good time too. So, you know, being with the old man for a week, but it was wonderful. And as I said, we have memories that last a lifetime. Now, I mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk a little bit about hockey culture, but I think I just did. There's now this thing with a certain faction is actually what I meant to say, where hockey culture has a negative connotation. And listen, like I said, hockey is no different than any other sport. It's no different than life. There's always going to be a certain segment of any group that makes things difficult or actually does some reprehensible, heinous things. That's not a hockey problem. That's a societal problem. When I think hockey culture, I think of the guys that I caught up with on this trip, Wayne Doucette and Steve McLaren and Rick Hayward and Eric Bolton and people that I had just met on this trip for the first time, like Sawyer and Ryder Bolton, you know, at that game, trying to think anyone else, any other kids that I may have met on this trip. Even Bowen Byram's mom and Jason Christie in Buffalo, and meeting someone like Jeff Toohey in person, someone that I had known about long before I ever met him. And you reconnect with these people in person, and it's like within 2 minutes, all the time that has taken place between your last meeting is all gone. And now you're all caught up. And meeting someone like, you know, Eric Bolton's kids, Sawyer and Ryder, and seeing their enthusiasm for the game and enthusiasm for playing hockey the way it should be played with a little bit of violence dashed in there. It's really heartwarming. And, you know, meeting someone like Jeff, a hockey lifer, and then just seeing the fans, seeing the, and I go back to North Bay just because it was the smallest arena, most kids, and just the most us versus them mentality, and Peterborough as well. And just seeing that's hockey culture to me. And this trip was great. Hopefully we can do a different province every season. Saskatchewan is next on the list. Finances, if they are available, Saskatchewan will be the next province that we hit. There's four Western Hockey League teams I'd like to see a game. And then you have the SJ there. Of course, Kevin Kaminsky runs the LaRange Ice Wolves. And definitely want to catch up with the boss of the SJHL. So I am hoping that we're able to do a Saskatchewan trip later this year. But I said, for those of you who like my solo episodes, let's see, how long has this episode been? What are we at now? Probably close to 2 hours. So if you like the sound of my voice, and I don't know why you would, there you go. I hope this fulfills your needs of my rambling. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I appreciate you people. Next week, if everything goes well this week, my guest next week is someone, not a player, not a former player, someone in the sports industry who's got a lot of stories about some of the players. And I almost let the cat out of the bag what his occupation is. But that should be next week. I'm all out of lost episodes with the release of the John Forslund episode, which, by the way, I hated the volume. I hated the recording of that episode. As I went back and listened to it, I just cringed most of the time with the primitive recording that I did on there. John was awesome, and I hope that you were able to listen to that and hear what he had to say. But for now, that's it. Everybody out there, have a great week, and we'll catch up soon. Have a great day.